Chapter 12, we've kind of been going through Hebrews in our Sunday school class, went through this chapter here just a while back, just got out of it, but it doesn't have nothing to do with what we've been going through. There you go, Jesse, don't forget to put your money in there. Somebody's. I hear these stupid jokes on the internet. Anybody ever seen the three guys that are sitting in a deer blind, and it's called, it's something like dumb dad jokes or something like that? Y'all ever see that?
I see Tech USA jokes.
Where do you take your dog when he lost his tail? To a retail store. Hey, there's a bunch of dumb ones. What do you call a happy factory? Satisfactory. There's a million. Hey, they're so dumb. You get to laughing at them laughing at the jokes. That's what you end up laughing at the whole time. Anyway, I thought I'd share that with you. Humor you a little bit. Wake you up, maybe. Apparently, Daryl thinks so. I'm putting you to sleep. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 18. And the Bible says, "For ye are not come unto the mount that might be touched and burned with fire, nor into blackness and darkness and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet, and the voice of words, which voice they that heard entreated that the word should not be spoken to them any more. For they could not endure that which was commanded, and if so much as a beast touch the mountain, it shall be stoned or thrust through with a dart. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I exceedingly fear and quake. But ye are come unto Mount Zion, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, which are written in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of just men made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of the new covenant, and to the blood of sprinkling that speaketh better things than that of Abel." And the title of the message today is "The Great Unseen Reality." We see two objects in our text this morning. We have Mount Sinai in verses 18 through 24. We know that Mount Sinai is an actual mountain that Moses went up, and up on Mount Sinai is where God gave Moses the law. Moses walked up that mountain, and it was a real mountain, and of course, he felt it when he walked on it. He could touch it. When Moses got on top of Mount Sinai, the Israelites had stood below. There's some Old Testament verses that speak about it, what they saw. There was a fire. There was fire, and there was smoke. It doesn't say it here, but I think there was like thunderings and lightnings that went on, and they could see that. They could see it. They could smell the smoke that came from that. They could see the darkness. They could see the blackness. They could feel, it says in verse 18, that there was a tempest, and so there was some wind like a storm. They could feel that, and they heard the sound of the trumpet and the voice of words. I think there was other emotions that they felt as well, like fear was something that we know that they felt it, because they said, "Moses, you go up there and talk to God, and you come back and tell us what he said, because we don't want to go up there." So everything that they saw about that when God spoke with Moses was a reality. All the senses that we have, the five senses, they could experience all of that. But then when we get to verse 22 and verse 22, through to verse 24, we've got to have Mount Zion. And, that mountain is an actual mountain as well. But when we read it in Hebrews, we're getting a metaphor. It's a metaphor. It's a metaphorical picture of things. It represents the place of God. It represents the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. It mentions a innumerable company of angels and the general assembly, which is the actual true church of God, and then the spirits of justified men. But notice in verse 22, it says, "But ye are come unto Mount Zion." You are come unto. In other words, for us to come unto that metaphorical mountain, It has to be real. Right? We can't come into that. You know, that's the question. You know, is it real? And if Mount Sinai was apprehended by the senses that we have, is Mount Zion apprehended by the senses as well? In other words, does our soul have eyes? Can our soul or our conscience, can it hear? It's the same thing. So that's what I want to talk to you about, basically, and I got 3 points that I want to talk to you or use to talk to you about that. The very first thing we see is reason. Reason. We have the ability to reason. And a few months ago, I guess it was now, I spoke on the topic, do you know God or do you just know about God? This would be a good companion verse for that. That's a good thought. Do you know God or do you just really know about God? And, you know, when God as an inference, a conclusion based on evidence or reasoning, you know, you reason things, you can come to a conclusion that way. You know, a lot of people believe that there's a God. There's a lot of people that if you just say, well, do you believe in God? Listen, there's a lot of lost people that believe in God. They believe in God based on things like one of the things that we look at is creation. We know that. Now, a lot of people are smart enough to figure out, listen, the Big Bang Theory didn't create everything in the universe. Matter of fact, we don't create too much with an explosion other than a hole in the ground. I mean, that's about what you get out of an explosion. We didn't have an explosion that set the earth on its axis and spinning like a top, and it stayed basically at the same speed for thousands of years. You know, that's some spinning job right there, right? It's, you know, that there's God that's maintaining that along the way, and all the planets and everything just the right distance and everything. You know, anybody with a brain that studied that very deeply really would find out that the universe wasn't created by an explosion, that it was created by a creator. We have to have a creator. So a lot of people have come to that conclusion. Yep, there's got to be a God. They figure that. But at the same time, they believe in God like we would believe in a historical figure. You know, we believe in George Washington. I guess you believe in George Washington. I do. We've got the history books. We didn't know him. We didn't know him in a personal way, but we knew he existed. Same thing. So the same way we can believe about God and not believe in God as a real person or have a personal relationship. There's people that are living today that we know who they are. If you watch sports, you know who the sports stars are, or you know, television people on the news, or people in acting or in the movies. We know who they are. You can read about their lives sometimes if you're interested in all that, which probably we're not too interested in most of it, but you know, we can read about them, but at the same time, we don't personally know them. We just know about them. Same thing I talked about when we talked about knowing God or knowing just about God. And then there's other people that know about God based on what other people say. That, you know, like what I say, what I'm the preacher. So what I say, they know God because of what I say up here, or what a Sunday school teacher says, or what other Christians, somebody that knows God, they know God about by what other people say, like what has God done, and people give testimonies. This is what God has done in my life. This is what God's doing in my life. And they're going, wow, they like it. It's fascinating. But at the same time, they don't know God that way. And you know, you may be in this category somehow along the way. I'm here to help you along with this right here. And so then, you know, but a lot of times people don't think about God as a reality, which I'll get to in a minute, as a reality right now in the here and now. Now, to others, God is just an ideal. You know, sometimes people say, well, boy, thank goodness. What are they really saying? I mean, goodness isn't anything you can actually thank, right? I mean, just goodness goes, wow, I appreciate you saying that. No, I mean, goodness is not a living organism, you know. It's an ideal. And so they look at God that way. You know, goodness, or they look at God as truth, that God represents truth, and he is truth. But none of these people really know God, a lot of them, in personal experience. And, you know, really, I'm going to tell you what, you can read the Bible. Now, get me here. You can read the Bible, and you should read the Bible. And you can know God from reading the Bible, but that's still not a personal experience with God. You're still reading the Bible like a history book. You're getting the facts of the book, but you know, it's still not a personal experience, the reality of God, which we'll get to in just a second. So the possibility, too, with a lot of people and a lot of people that are probably sitting in churches all over the place today, the possibility of knowing God personally has not entered their mind. They haven't thought about that. They're not thinking about it, that this is a possible thing. I know we read about, like, Moses walking up and talking to God on Mount Sinai, and we think, boy, this could never happen. Well, we wouldn't have to talk to God about the law, but we could have a relationship with God in the same way, but many people don't think that we can. And so if that's the case, then we could say that there are a lot of people, as far as their experience goes, and even I think this applies even to people that who have put faith in what Jesus has done on the cross. I'm saying that they're saved people. Their Christian experience with God may be no more real to them than it is to a non-Christian. Their experience may be no more real than a non-Christian or maybe even an atheist in reality. They love an ideal or a principle, but they're not experiencing the person of God. So we see we have reason. The second thing that I want to talk to you about is reality. Psalm 34:8 says, "Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good." We see two senses, taste and sight, two things. And there's things that, you know, you think, well, okay, well, how are you going to taste God or see God? How many of you know, if I said, boy, it's mouth-watering. If you think of some food that you really like, I don't know what else I could throw out there at you, you know, if you like shrimp or you like steak or you like some kind of dessert and you've had it before and you start thinking about it when you're real hungry, huh? You get that old mouth, yeah, your old mouth starts to water, and in your mind, you can tell, you know what it tastes like. You know what's coming. Man, we went to London graduation last Saturday, and good grief, man, I mean, reservations and all. We were at the restaurant 2.5 hours. Man, we waited so long. I said, I was ready, man. The lady was bringing, I had a New York strip and all that, and I was waiting on that thing. I was going to dig in before she got done setting it down on the table. Man, I was ready to go, man. We about, you know, if you weren't hungry when you got there, you were by the time the food got. You know, you could just, boy, you can, or you smell it. You smell that old hot buttered popcorn somewhere. You go in the mood, huh? Boy, your old mouth starting, huh? You can kind of taste that salt and that butter already, right, without thinking about it. So we can taste and see with our senses about a reality that may not be in our presence like food at the time, but we understand what it is. And so the same terms that we see are used to express the knowledge of physical things are also used to express the knowledge of God, that we can taste and see God the same way. In the Bible, there's plenty of them in the Bible. Jesus said, "My sheep hear my voice," John 10:27, right? Well, how do you hear his voice? How do you hear the voice of God? Audible? I'm not saying you couldn't, but usually not. Usually it's another way, right? Conscience, huh? Heart, you know, that's how we hear the voice of God. "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." Matthew 5:8. They shall see God. Well, there's another verse in the Bible that tells us no man can see God and live. Not God in his essence. We can't see him and live that way, but we see God another way. Huh? The reality of God. We know that he's real it's a real deep thing. It's a thing that kind of runs around this way. You know, we can see God and yet not see God, but we can see God in many things. And there's a lot of other passages that would go along with the senses, like this, you know, we got sight, we can hear sound, hearing, that's a sense, smelling, tasting, touching. Like we hear, you know, how do we hear in the voice of God? There's two things. There's voice and us hearing that voice. You know, there's the senses from us and somebody else. So God, this is how we act. This is how we work in the physical world. This is how we walk around the physical world, right? We you know, you could see, you can touch things, feel things. You know, if it's hot, huh? We hear, huh? We smell, huh? All those things. Where did those senses come from? God gave them to us. All right, God gave them to us. Why? So that we can apprehend the physical world that we live in. God has given us those senses. This is how we operate. And if we get something out of whack, you know, sometimes our other senses are good. People that lose their sight, they lose a sense. But boy, they're really in tune to hearing, most of them. Most of them. You know, they can tell by the sound of their feet. Ray Charles, blind musician, he put hard tacks on his shoes so he'd hear the echo. And see, when he walked by a wall, here he can hear the sound. And as soon as he stepped past the opening, the sound changes. Now see, if you're not, you may not be in tune with that, but if you were blind, you would be. See, that's how he can operate. He knows there's a way to go another way. And so, and a lot of people that lost their sight. So this is how we operate. So another sense is increased. And it's something that God has given us for the purpose of functioning in the physical world. Now, God has given us the ability to apprehend him. And there's some things that God has given us to hear him and to feel him and to touch him. And, you know, even there's even smells associated with the fragrance of God. It uses that terminology, the fragrance of God, and those type things. And so, you know, we have a conscience. That conscience is speaking. It speaks to us. We hear it internally, not externally. We hear that. And all of these things, you know, like we have our heart, that which is, you got to be careful with your heart because it's deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. But I think God does speak with the heart. He gives us a new heart when we're saved. And all of these things that God has given to us to operate in the spiritual world, which is just as real as the physical world. I was talking to Brother Daniel Anderson. He's the president of Appalachian Bible College. He spoke at the teachers' conference we went to yesterday. I've met him several times, talked to him several times in the past. He's a smart guy, and we got to talking about that, you know, about, you know, people, the reality of God, and people not understanding, you know, that everything is just as real, you know, in the spiritual side of things, the spiritual side of life, the unseen world. See, unseen doesn't mean unreal, right? I mean, there's things that we comprehend them with another thing, say like an earthquake. I mean, you can see the results of it, but there's earthquakes that happen that don't split the earth open. We just feel the rumble, so we felt it, right? Wind blows, you don't see the wind. You see the results of it, but you can't see the wind. It just blows. The trees move because it blows, or something blows across there. But we don't really actually see the wind, but we know that that's a real thing, right? And so there's things like that in the unseen world. So unseen doesn't mean unreal. And there's people that believe, they say, well, you know, I'm not going to believe something if I don't see it. I know a guy, local famous atheist, that always tells me, well, if I just, I got to see it to believe it. Well, that's not real. That's not reality, because there's things in life that we don't see, but we do believe it, right? For other reasons. You know, we operate that way. I was thinking about a whole bunch of things out there like that. Wind is one of the illustrations I just gave. Yeah, but we know, as we see what it does. I mean, hey, you stuff a gas pump down in your car and pull the trigger, man. Most of the time you don't see the gas going in there. You smell it. Huh? But, you know, and it doesn't smell as good as it used to. Boy, that old regular gas used to smell so good, but it got that ethanol. It's not the same. Huh? You remember that? Some of you young people going, I don't know what he's talking about. You're right. You don't. Huh? But you get in the car and you turn the gauge, and if, you know, if you're not driving a Ford, the gas gauge works, and you can see that you see the thing goes up there, you fill it up, right? So it says it's full. You didn't see it. You go the amount of miles that it says you can go, you find out that it's real. The old bus out there, the gas gauge don't work on that Ford. And so what Stephanie and Larry, they got a log book in there. Stephanie said yesterday we're going to go to the teacher's conference. She said, tell me what the mileage is. Let me look at my book. All right, we only went 100 miles. We can make it. Huh? That's how you do. Gas gauge. Operate from that. So, but here's the thing. Most of unregenerated man, and I mean by this by a lost person, a person that's not saved, their spiritual senses are like asleep or they're kind of stagnant. They're not looking at it. You know, and if you've been saved any amount of time, just think of the things that you pick up on, spiritually speaking. Like, we see the way the world's going. The Bible says it's going to go worse and worse. It's going that way. You know, we understand. We understand what's going on. We see what's going on. We can watch the news. We can watch the things, the world events. We know that because our spiritual senses have been exercised, by God. So we see it. But the natural man, the unregenerated man, blinded by sin. That's a term that's used in the Bible. That's a literal thing. Blinded by, we don't see it. You know, they literally can't see it. Have you ever talked to somebody that's lost? You tried to talk to them about spiritual truth, and buddy, they cannot get it. They cannot see it because of that sense. One of the senses, or more than one of the senses. That's the fallen state. But then the life of God changes that. You know, the life of God changes it. So we think about the question here. So why do, and I'm talking, listen, there's people that are saved. I'm not doubting whether they're saved or not. But, you know, because the Bible says, listen, faith the size of a grain of mustard seed. We can say, cast a mountain into the sea. It'll do it. God could do it if it's his will. So that's doing a lot with a little, right? And so our faith for salvation can be even smaller than that. So you can be saved, and yet at the same time, you're not experiencing God or don't know God in that same personal way. Like Enoch, man, he walked with God. Moses talked with God in as much of a face-to-face conversation as he could have. Even when he asked God, he said, I want to see your face. He said, well, you can't see it and live, but I put you in the cleft of a rock, and I'm going to hide my hand, cover you with my hand. I'll let you see my hinder parts. I don't know what he saw. I don't know what he saw, but I just know he had a relationship with God, and he knew. But so many people in Christianity today don't have this living, you know, you hear these terms and they blow in one ear and out the other, but let's focus a little bit. A living personal relationship, a real personal relationship, like you know a person you know, a husband and a wife, a parent and a child, a best friends, people, you know somebody that way, you know, that personal, that we can know God that way. And the reason is it's really an unbelief problem. It's a faith problem. It always is. It's got, you know, we don't either know or don't believe that we can know. Now, faith, what happens with faith? Faith enables the spiritual senses to function. Faith enables the spiritual senses to function. So we have to or must believe in the reality of a living personal God. Now, our view of reality is kind of skewed by what's called the world view, the world philosophy, the way the world. I mean, you know, I haven't heard as much about it. I've shared this with you. You know that the realists, they're out there that feel, well, listen, they say that there's no absolutes, which I said before. That's an absolute statement, by the way. So you do believe in absolutes if you say there's no absolutes because you just made an absolute statement. But they really believe that in a certain way that, like, things change. Everything, like, points of things are changed. But, you know, they live their life, they don't live that way. They live on absolutes. You have to live on absolutes because truth is absolute. It's always absolute, right? It's that, and so they believe that. And those people would have to deny the very philosophy that they claim. And so we, you know, we understand that. And so God, listen, God is real. God is absolute. And God is real in the absolute fixed sense that nothing else is. Now, here's a profound thought. All other reality is contingent upon his reality. All the other reality, you can roll this little marble around in your head tonight all you want to, and this is, all other reality is contingent upon the reality of God. All of it. Everything else. A good definition of reality is that would exist if there were no mind anywhere to think about it. That which would exist if there were no mind anywhere to even think about it. Remember the old saying, I remember in the Boy Scouts, they would ask you, we'd goofing around, we'd be camping. If a tree fell in the forest and nobody was around to hear it, would there be sound? Well, we understand how sound works, and yeah, there'd be sound. There'd still be a sound. People used to sit around thinking about this. Huh? Educated people sitting around arguing about it. Well, that ain't no sound. There's a sound wave going. They wouldn't have no eardrum to hit and all that. They got to be the people that are saying there's no absolutes, right? Now, somebody out here thinking, nah, he's wrong. There ain't no sound. I know somebody. Listen, that which is real does not depend upon the observer for its reality. It doesn't even depend on somebody's approval. Reality doesn't depend on man's approval to say, well, yeah, that's a real thing. No, reality, that's the definition of reality. And this is God. You know, God is real and God is alive, and it doesn't matter whether you believe it. It doesn't matter whether I believe it. It doesn't matter whether anybody believes it. God is just as real. You know, they used to have that old saying, the bumper sticker said, God said it, I believe it, and that settled it. No, that's not right. God said it, that settles it. It don't matter whether you believe it or not. It's the truth whether you believe it or not. And there's the truth. The truth is a real thing. It's an absolute thing. It's absolute. Truth is absolute. It's a real thing. So we have the reality. And then we come to this word reckon. Now all us old rednecks, man, we know what reckon is, right? Hey, you want to go down to the store? I reckon. You think it's going to snow? I reckon it will. Huh? You know, we use reckon all the time, but it's in the Bible. The word reckon means to calculate. Huh? We couldn't spell calculate, so we made up reckon. I reckon we probably can't spell that right. R-E-C-O-N, right? Yeah. Now, reckon is not imagination, because imagination is not faith. Reckon is not an imagination. It's not faith. Faith doesn't create anything. You can't put faith in faith. Faith doesn't create a thing. It simply reckons upon, calculates upon that which is already there. It already exists, like God, right? So, God and the spiritual world are real, and we can reckon upon them or calculate upon them with as much assurance as we reckon upon what we see. This is what Brother Daniel Anderson and I were talking about. We were talking about how, and I've said this, we're like a visually oriented people. You know, video games are real popular and all that. People don't sit and read things, like, even though that's visual, you're kind of reading it, but you have to use your mind. You know, when you read something, you usually use your imagination to picture what you read. But now we're so, everything's visual, man, movies and everything. We sit there, we don't have to do anything. We don't have to do a lot of thinking, even though we do to some degree with that. And so, we have a tendency that what it's done psychologically is it's got us to the point that if we don't see it, we don't think it's as real as what we do see. This is, you know, the gist of this. But when we think about faith, the world of the senses, what you can touch and taste and see and hear, does not appeal to faith. The Bible's got a verse on that. The Bible says we walk by faith and not by sight, which we could add in there. We walk by faith and not by touch. We walk by faith and not by sound. Huh? We walk by faith and not by taste. We walk by faith and not by smell. Right? We could put every sense in there. We walk by faith and not by any of the five senses that we have in the physical world. And our senses are, we constantly, in the physical world, we see, we hear, we touch, everything's going on. And so we know without a shadow of a doubt that those are things that are real. Now listen, not everything you see is real. I like to watch, I haven't watched it in a while. There's a show that came on TV. I don't even know if it's on anymore. It's called Brain Games. Anybody ever watch Brain Game? They do some things. They do all kind of things that has to get you to thinking. And they did a thing with optical illusions. And they had like a picture, looked like a painting. And they said, what is the largest object in the picture? And that was like a senior looking through an opening. There was a glass and a bottle, like a bottle of wine, a wine glass and this and that and everything. And obviously when you're looking at the thing, because of the way it's positioned and what you think the depth is, you think that the wine glass, I think, or the bottle was the biggest thing. But then they backed everything out or moved everything forward and whatever it was, and actually those two objects were the smallest things. It was just a trick on your eyes. You know, everybody, we've seen things that are optical illusions, right? So what we think, what we see is reality, when in fact it could be not reality. It's not real, right? This is how it works in the physical. You ever play? We all played the game where you whisper something in somebody's ear. The first guy's got the right sentence. And then the next person whispers what they thought they heard, and the next person, and the next person, and the next person. We could try that one Sunday if you want to. We had a lot more time. We get it around here. And you remember how that game, when you got to the other end, everybody's cracking up. It ain't nothing to do with, and probably it got messed up from person one. So everything we hear is not true or may not be reality, right? It may not be reality. So all in the physical world, even though we have the senses to operate with, when I was in the Boy Scouts, we were going to initiate this kid. We were good, man. We were at our summer camp where we camped all week long in Pipsico, right across the river from Jamestown. If you ever been there, Sherry and I went and saw it a couple years ago. And we got this kid, man, and we got this hot thing. We made like a brand out of a coat hanger, and it was BSA, Boy Scouts of America. I guess now you got to call it Boy/Girl Scouts of America. And we had it. We got it all heated up, and we had this other kid laying there, and we had took toothpaste, and we wrote BSA on his stomach. And in the dark, you know, it was nighttime, and we had a lantern, and it looked like, it looked like a big burn, that the scar was bubbling up on his stomach. And he's laying down there screaming. He's in on it. He's laying down there screaming, ah, we got his shirt ripped off, and we got this other kid. Yeah, you got to get initiated into the Boy Scouts, man. We got to brand you. And he's going, oh, no, no. And so we blindfold him, and we lay him on the ground, and we got some ice. And you know, when you do ice, all of a sudden, he thinks he's going to get burnt. We let him feel the heat just a little bit off that glowing thing. And then you took ice cubes, and you stuck, ah, he's screaming. Now, his senses was telling him, this is good. Y'all can use this if you want. His senses were telling him that he was going to get burned. But it wasn't. It was ice. It was the exact opposite. So you see how skewed everything can be in what we believe to be reality. The object of Christian faith is unseen reality. And there's no contrast, listen to me, there's no contrast between the spiritual and the real. The spiritual is just as real as what you see. Maybe even realer, because in the spiritual sense, you're not going to be deceived. Not from God. I mean, there's contrast between real and imaginary, spiritual and material, or temporal and eternal, but never between the spiritual and the real. It's not. It's just as real. God's as real as anything you see. Realer, if that's a word. It's not. He's realer, but we understand it because we're from Buchanan. We're living in Buchanan. Huh? It's more real. God is more real than anything that we see. Hebrews 11:6 says, he that cometh to God must believe that he is reality, right? And that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. You can't find him if he's not real. Right? Now, there's a common mistake. I'm almost done, so hang on to your seats. I see everybody squirming around, man. I guess boredom is a reality too, right? Here's a common mistake by a lot of people. Even though we believe, you may say, well, I believe all the things that you're saying about the reality of the unseen and the spiritual and all that, but this is a psychological thing that you may do that you don't realize you have done. You push all the spiritual things into the future, not the here and now. You push all spiritual. Yeah, I know there's a God, and one day I'm going to see God. Mm-hmm. when I get to heaven. And I know angels are real, and one day I'm going to see them. Talked about angels in Sunday school. I'm going to see them in the future. And I know all these spiritual things, all these spiritual realities are going to be real when we get there, when we die. No, the spiritual realities are just as real now as they are in the future. So we have this tendency to push them, and we even push God. Yeah, I know God's real, but I'm going to push God out into the distant future. Maybe I'll be more serious on my deathbed. You might not get to a deathbed. Maybe I'll be more serious about things. I'm going to push God into the future, and I know I'm going to see God. And I know that I'm talking about saved people even say, I know I'm going to have a relationship with God when I get to heaven. But they don't think about the relationship they could have now. Huh? I mean, it's going to be a sad day when you walk into heaven and God's got to come up to you and say, oh, let me introduce myself. Huh? I mean, we don't know who he is, right? It's not future, it's present. See, verse 22 says, but ye are come, present tense, unto Mount Zion. Not going to, you're come to what? The city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, innumerable company of angels, the general assembly, which is the true church of the firstborn. And it says, to spirits of just men made perfect. He said, you are come. You've come to that now. You can come to that right now. It's not future. It's present tense. So how is your God consciousness? Do you hear him? Do you feel him? Do you see him with the eye of faith in the present tense personal way? Is God as much of your life, just is he as much a part of your life as any tangible thing that you can lay your hand on in your house or here today? He should be, and he can be. It's present tense, personal way we can have that relationship with God. Huh? Saul starts by being saved. You have to be saved. You know, without salvation, we have not the Spirit of God. Our spiritual senses are still not in tune with the reality of the spiritual world. Come on up here, Paul. Saved by grace through faith. Faith in a real, present and personal Christ. We'll have an invitation. Listen, this is the thing. This is the thing. It goes all the way back to that question I laid. Do you know God this way? Do you know God in a real way? A real way. Do you know God that way? Personal way. That's the question.
Thank you, Pastor. Hymn 270 is Just As I Am. Let's stand together.